Well, hi there. This is David Wilcock, and you are listening to another Divine Cosmos audio blog. I'm very excited for you to hear this conversation that I had with Benjamin Fulford because of the subject that we're discussing. Namely, we are at a point in history where one of the major factions of the world elite is finally on its death knell. This would be the Rockefeller faction, which, as I've written about before, originated in America as a result of the European or Rothschild faction, extending them the ability to produce oil and generate profits from it. And the Rothschilds appear to have never imagined the scope of profits that would be gained by this oil industry, or the fact that their own allies would turn on them and become a separate faction that would actually battle against them quite viciously for power and control. I would highly recommend, as a backdrop to this piece that you're about to hear between Fulford and myself, that you read my book that I put online for free called Disclosure Endgame. I have a lot of things going on in my schedule right now. I do apologize for the fact that I have not been able to finish the conclusion of the book as of yet. But there are many, many events unfolding at a massive speed right now. Benjamin Fulford is the former East-West editor for Forbes magazine. And he came out several years ago now and revealed that he had been contacted by members of the so-called Illuminati. And immediately thereafter, he was also contacted by members of an Asian secret society that had been reanimated after a long dormant phase in order to help fight this scourge of world power that has now become so obvious to even the biggest fence sitters in these other countries in the world. This Asian secret society referred to itself as the Red and the Green. It is now clear from talking to Fulford that he has since expanded his level of contacts and worked with others who are not just the Red and the Green anymore, but have formed a larger society, which he is now calling the Black Dragon Society. If you follow his website like I do, you may have had some questions arise, and right before we had this conversation, I was able to get many of those questions answered by him. This conversation occurred just a day or two before the Haiti earthquake, and it was unclear right away exactly what that earthquake was, because it had such destructive power and was so catastrophic. I did remember reading from Christopher Story that there was a series of transactions for the South America area that were running through Haiti, and in fact that appears to be part of what was going on. In short, it seems that what we dealt with here, according to multiple whistleblower testimonies, is small incendiary devices, nuclear devices, that were actually sent in and burrowed down into the earth to create earthquakes in the seismic fault lines around Haiti. Thankfully, the scope of what was planned was much, much worse than what actually happened. A variety of them did not detonate. This goes from Fulford's own sources, as he revealed after this conversation that we had. Now, why would somebody want to do that? It sounds completely horrific and terrible, and it doesn't make any sense. Well, it's an ugly subject, but the bottom line is that if you have this faction, all they know is world power and domination and control. They're on their last legs now. They've been shot, and they're on the run, bleeding. And what they're trying to do is preserve their own existence. So by doing something like this, it basically is their way of trying to tell everyone else in the world, if you try to take us down, we're going to take down a lot of people along with us. We're going to make it really, really hurt. Fulford had already been saying, in fact, he probably says in this conversation, that we were going to have probably some kind of 9/11 again. Because what's happened is a whole series of events have taken place, and you're going to hear Benjamin and I discuss that in this conversation. These events are profound in scope, and it really underlines the fact that everybody is tired of these guys, they're tired of the games, they're tired of the lies. The international community is now cracking down, making this happen. So, another big piece of context you need before we get into this conversation directly is the work of Christopher Story. Fulford had mentioned Christopher Story in one of his recent writings. Specifically, there is an article that Story wrote on January 7th regarding Operation Stillpoint. Now, what is that? Operation Stillpoint was something that Story uncovered through his own investigative journalism research and his work with Leo Wanta. I've been aware of Leo Wanta all the way back to when Sherman Skolnick was discussing him, I believe in the late 1990s. And I even referred to it in my article called The Changing of the Guard, Corporate Media Whistleblower Speaks. This is, in fact, something that really has changed the game, bringing Wanta into the equation. He came forward and was trying to get people hip to the idea of disembodying the Federal Reserve, putting everybody on U.S. Treasury notes printed by the U.S. Treasury in accordance with the Constitution. But the real key is, he said, the elimination of the banking system. So you have to understand that it's packaged as if it would be a really good thing. But what would end up happening is that you would have the Rockefeller faction with the ability to have total control over the economy. So again, there's a lot of context that Fulford and I are discussing. And where this gets interesting is that Christopher Story specifically was able to uncover information saying that this plan existed. And the plan, of course, involves the destruction of all competition and ultimately the total control of the economy by the Rockefeller faction, disguised as something that we would say, wow, we really like that. Part of the reason why they would want to do this is the Federal Reserve actually has Rothschilds and Rockefellers in the members that run it. So if you have your own enemies running it, then you can't control it the way you'd want to. So naturally, you'd want to knock it down. That's obviously part of why we're seeing even Fox News coming out more and more with anti-Federal Reserve propaganda of various kinds. Now, I actually think the Federal Reserve should be brought down, and one of the things you're going to hear Benjamin and I discussing is how important it is that that happens. But let's be clear on the fact that whatever replaces it should not supplant the existing banking system, to the extent that people's money should have the right to be in competitive environments where you get to choose the bank that you want to have, and various banks will run themselves in different ways. It is not a situation where we want the government to run the bank for us. There may be some necessity for stabilization, but it's certainly not a long-term thing that we need to have. And I wouldn't support the idea of a total bank takeover by the government. I think it's terrible. Anyway, what has happened is that Obama signed an executive order late last year that, of course, the conspiracy websites went crazy about. But according to Christopher Story, the only reason why this was signed was so that Interpol could actually work within the United States without the jurisdiction of United States law. That is the suspension of habeas corpus. It is a very, very substantial event that hasn't occurred since the time of the Civil War. But what it did is to allow Interpol to come into this country and to effectively arrest the conspirators of this Rockefeller faction who have been engaged in what they call economic terrorism on a massive scope. This is also the result of a $47 trillion lien, L-I-E-N, of course, that has been placed against the U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve by the international community, specifically led by China. One of the things that you're going to hear us talking about is the fact that many of the central banks have now been discovered to have tungsten rather than gold. It's electroplated with gold on the outside, but tungsten on the inside. Tungsten is only like $10 a pound. And so it's a way to basically create a lot of fake money out of nothing. This is not a situation that's going to go away. In fact, the only source that really has had an inside scoop on this that didn't seem to talk about it yet was the voice of the White House at tbrnews.org. And after Fulford and I had this conversation, I went to TBR News, and sure enough, there was a whole article just dedicated to this subject. The voice of the White House now had his own intel. confirming that a lot of the gold in the world's central banks is actually electroplated tungsten. In his idea, he thinks that China did it, and that we, meaning the U.S., did not actually create these forgeries ourselves. That's just his opinion, and I don't agree with it. There's a lot of other evidence that, in fact, it was done by people in the U.S., including whistleblowers I've spoken to privately myself who confirmed that that's what was going on. So you have to understand that now we have multiple sources, including Voice of the White House, all saying the same thing. They're all saying this tungsten gold issue is real. It's not going away. This is the kind of stuff that happens in what we call an endgame. Now, Benjamin Fulford and I do not discuss the UFO subject until the end. One of the really substantial things that's happened is that we have come into contact with a new witness who's choosing to call himself Hans Solo. And this guy actually worked for the Space Command, as it's called, the Air Force Space Command. This is allegedly a group within the U.S. that works using Stargate technology, or what they also call portal technology, and then from there travels to a variety of ships that they have well outside the solar system and are engaged in various activities. This particular witness was involved in mining of a particular compound called Element 115. One of the things he told us in the interview is that the galaxy out at the far rim has different types of energetic fields that are much more powerful than what's around our solar system now based on the physics of the energy fields. And because of these really, really high energy fields, there are actually going to be mineral deposits in the planets in that area, specifically the star Equulius in the Hercules constellation, that are very energized and actually have element 115 in them that you can mine. Now, we don't know if this is true. We can't prove this because element 115 is technically a stable element, meaning that it could occur in nature, but there would be no example of it here on Earth. We can't even really create it in our high-powered particle accelerators because it's so vastly dense. But if you had a planet that was under vastly different energy conditions than what our planet has, then maybe it is possible. And we don't know if that's true, but that's what he's telling us. So anyway, this information coincided very beautifully with some stuff that Fulford had put out on his own blog, describing that one of the groups that's now contacted him in this greater Black Dragon Society was indeed U.S. Space Command, a representative of U.S. Space Command, who came out to Japan and told him that they are ready to cooperate. They see the fall of the Rockefeller faction coming imminently. They do not want to be associated with it. They want to be their own entity, and they want to be able to help the world. So they are saying that they have these spaceships and they have portal technology, and when the time comes, they are ready to disclose it. Now, Han Solo also has said that sometime this year we should likely see disclosure because it's a schedule that our guys here on Earth don't have control over. It's a very fascinating interview. We're in the process of having the transcript edited so we can put it online. It will probably not be ready for at least a week, but we're getting that done as fast as we can. We're not going to release the audio. We cannot compromise his true identity. So I was very keen on trying to get more information from Benjamin about what Space Command told him. You'll notice he's very evasive, and I'm not trying to attack him here, but it's very possible that he was sworn to secrecy on the things that he was told, and that could explain why he was so reluctant to discuss anything with me. But I do honestly believe that all of these things that you're about to hear Fulford and I discussing are leading up to a disclosure. The Rockefeller faction very obviously has been the main group opposing the disclosure of the reality of the extraterrestrial presence. That means that if they fall into defeat, which appears to be happening, now that Obama has signed this executive order, you have Interpol that's operating within the United States, holding the Federal Reserve transactions basically at gunpoint on both ends to make sure that these transactions go through. You see a much greater level of sophistication to this takedown than you've ever seen before. Now again, Haiti was supposed to be the main stopover point for a massive, massive amount of money that was going to be transferred out of the pockets of the Rockefeller faction to South America. And before the transactions took place, you had this earthquake. And I mean directly before. So, according to Fulford's latest posts, which are not covered in our discussion here, the international community is very, very upset about this. They're very angry. And we can expect things to get more intense, not less intense. So again, this is a war. This is kind of like the football game that's leading up to the big announcement. I don't know when the announcement is going to be. Nobody can predict this thing for sure. It is a war. One of the things that we can also probably see is there will be some economic turmoil once these guys are brought down. You're going to see some upheaval. I discussed this with Fulford. I have another source that I did not discuss in this interview that has said one estimated time for when things could really fall apart is March. We honestly don't know. Disclosure is not simply something that somebody writes in on a calendar and says, let's do it on such and such day. And so I know there are hecklers out there who have tried to say, oh, well, you know, you said it was going to happen by such and such, and then it didn't happen. You said it was going to happen by the end of the year, and then it didn't happen. All I've done so far is to relay information that I've heard from other reliable whistleblowers. I also am getting intuitive information that has not given me an exact time window, but has made it very clear that this is going to happen, and probably sooner rather than later. So, without further ado, I invite you to enjoy this discussion that I have with Benjamin Fulford. This is really talking about the financial and world power football game behind the scenes, looking at the play-by-play and trying to figure out when exactly the whole thing is going to come crashing down, because in the aftermath, we're going to have a much greater and more prosperous world. The financial system will be restructured in a way that is beneficial for humanity, and you're going to see the revealing of many, many wonderful truths that have been suppressed for so long. It is truly a magnificent event that's coming upon us. I'm very excited to have had this conversation, to be offering it to you now. So without further ado, let's go for it.
Good. How are you?
Very well. Very well.
So, what's going on?
Well, I have recently subscribed to your BenjaminFulford.net website. And I would like to, first of all, commend you on the incredible job that you've done. I would say that the depth and the quality of your journalism has suddenly gone way up, and it's really nice to see that. I would encourage everybody to subscribe, because if people are only going and looking at BenjaminFulford.typepad.com, then they're not getting the picture of what you're doing here. Now, you released a couple of them that were free to the public, right? Right, because I remember I read those first, but then what people may not realize is that you really have delivered the payload in the ones that have now come out since you switched it over to a pay-only site.
Maybe I should put them out after time or something, you know, for free, you know, after 1 month delay or something, I don't know. But obviously, you know, it helps. If I'm paid, I can spend more time and effort.
Absolutely. Now, is there a way you could increase your voice volume? Because right now you sound like you're really, really far away.
I'm using an old microphone because the cat chewed up my Skype headset.
Okay.
I'll just have to put my mouth closer.
Well, I appreciate that. That's going to work a lot better. Yeah, that's definitely one avenue that you could take. I wrote actually an online book recently called Disclosure Endgame, and I didn't finish it, but it's basically talking about how there is a financial event that's coming to its apex, and this financial event seems to be correlated with the release of various suppressed technologies in the aftermath, and you are certainly one of the leading voices on this front. And go ahead.
Yeah, well, no, we're actually, you know, working on concrete projects at this point.
Yeah, I am very aware that you've done that, and I've actually, as you know, been in contact with some of the people who contacted you originally when this all got started, specifically someone in the Japanese royalty. Okay, so I got to say, Benjamin, that I really think that you've taken some abuse on the internet that's unwarranted, as does anybody who's really bringing out the truth. It's like the entrenched power interests have a stake in trying to ridicule you to some degree. And I just want to say that as one of the more respected researchers in this field, and how many people read my stuff, that everybody knows that my perspective has always been that you're coming from a place of integrity. And I just want to, again, commend you on the ability that you've had to toe the line and stay on this very difficult path, given the opposition that you face and the ridicule that you're inevitably going to face when you break out of the mainstream and go into these kinds of subjects.
Well, you see, they might ridicule me, but they always refuse to debate me directly because they know I would crush them with facts and truth. So, you know, I don't really pay attention to these cowardly people and these disinformation agents out on the net. They're just not, I don't have the time. And I do deal directly, I mean, I really do have direct contact with very important movers and shakers, and we are working on a new financial system. And no matter what they do, they can't stop it. So,
What do your debunkers typically say in terms of how in the world you could have gotten access to David Rockefeller in an interview? I mean, what's the typical skeptical attack that they could even give you on that point? Because, I mean, obviously, there you are interviewing the guy.
Look, the David Rockefeller thing was, people think he must be an insider. Well, no, what happened was he came here to ask for money from the emperor. And he appeared at a book signing at a bookstore in Japan. They suddenly closed the bookstore, a bunch of security came in, and there was David Rockefeller. And somebody took a picture of him and put it on the net. And somebody forwarded that picture to me, saying David Rockefeller's in town. And I know that when bigwigs come, they usually stay at the Hotel Okura, which is across the street from the U.S. Embassy.
Ah.
So I waited until 10 o'clock at night, which is, I figured when all his handlers would have gone to bed, but he'd still be awake. I phoned the hotel and said, could I please talk to David Rockefeller? And they put me through to his room.
Oh, my God.
And I said, can I interview you? And he said, yes. And I went the next morning with a camera from Iran TV and interviewed him.
That's incredible. So this was not facilitated by your contacts within the Japanese royalty or anything. This was just something you did on your own initiative.
Yeah, I mean, as a journalist, I knew this. I mean, I've done this before with people like Paul Volcker, you know.
Right.
You know where they stay, and if you call in English instead of Japanese, they think you must be an insider, and they just put you straight through to these people.
Wow, unbelievable.
But the other thing is, I could have told the Japanese sort of underworld types, and they could have dragged them off somewhere, but, you know, I'm not a gangster. I'm a journalist, so I didn't tell them, okay? I didn't let those dangerous people know where he was.
Well, I think that's a good thing. I don't think that at this point it's going to be constructive to, as Christopher Story calls it, horizontalize anyone. But there is going to be some tribunals. I mean, if you read Christopher Story's article, which you endorsed recently in one of your latest posts, he's basically saying that the floodgates have been opened and Interpol is now free to work in the U.S. and that as of December 6th, the whole thing is starting to be shut down, this Operation Stillpoint that was run by the Bush administration.
Yeah, I know. I have my own sources who I have verified to be, you know, senior members of the Rothschilds family and a person from the remote viewing outfit of the CIA and other, you know, I have my own personal high-level contacts. So if I write something that's the same as Mr. Story, it means that I have confirmed it with my own sources. I would not, you know, write something. Like, if you're a journalist and it appears in writing, it means somebody has beaten you to the story.
That's true.
So anything I write, I have confirmed with sources I believe to be reliable. And if it turns out to be wrong, I'll issue a correction. In fact, one thing I must, I said that George Bush Sr. Was killed, but what I really was likely, said we haven't confirmed it, but what I was able to confirm at the time of the Fort Hood shootings independently was that there were a lot of VIP limousines there, that there were many contradictory stories about how many shooters there were,
mm-hmm.
and that George Bush Jr. and his wife immediately rushed to the hospital afterwards, and that, you know, the MI6 people were telling me there had been an attempt on his life. But then you see him appear at a football game, and what they told me, and there's a lot of stuff I hear that I don't write because I just don't find it credible, but what they told me was that they had replaced him with a clone, and it was an old and not very good quality one. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, and I don't want to put something like that out because, like I say, extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof. But we have confirmed that he's very senile. Maybe he forgets what he said 3 minutes ago. And he's no longer the real power. It's his wife. And the other thing about Henry Kissinger, again, my sources tell me that. Now, they may put out an old video of him on TV to try to discredit me, but until I confirm otherwise, I believe he was taken out.
Well, there's no question that the action has really reached its pinnacle here. There is such depth of data in Christopher Story's presentation. And it obviously is correlating independently with what you're saying. I do think it's unfortunate that he chose to attack you based on some sort of paranoia that just because your Black Dragon Society has...
Oh, look.
You know.
Obviously, look, he's providing good information, but
yeah.
Obviously he has a few personality problems, and I think it's best not to, you know, get involved in some kind of tit-for-tat argument with the man, but if libel is issued, I have to issue a correction, that's all.
Right. And what I will say is that when you recently, in your post from the 13th of January, disclosed the actual nature and structure of the Black Dragon Society, I mean, it basically seems as if you've got just about everybody on Earth in all the varying factions singularly unified against this Bush-run cartel of the so-called Rockefeller faction. That seems to be what's happened here. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, there's... basically, we're dealing with the royal families of Europe, the Tool Society, and the people who own the printing machines for money worldwide, except for the Bank of China.
Okay.
And... basically, they've been ruled by terror and murder for hundreds of years, and they've been very scared. And so the minute some people came out with some actual, backing, in other words, some heavies standing behind you, so you can speak the truth without worrying about being immediately killed, then all sorts of people popped out of the woodwork and said, oh, yes, we hate those guys. Please help us, And we're not with them. This is the sort of thing that happened. But it's clearly not over. They still have a lot of power because they're still, you're reading all that nonsense in the corporate propaganda media still.
Correct.
And the Washington show is still going on with all, the continuing wars and murder and stuff. So it's not over. But yes, there are very serious forces aligning themselves saying, look, we've been making a mess running this planet. And we need to change how we behave as a species. And I think that consensus is getting very powerful now.
Well, you list, I just want to read a little excerpt for people who may not have been to your website of the membership that you listed. You say, our membership includes high-level members of the Rothschild family who want to use some of their gold to pay off U.S. external debts. They agree to help the planet so long as they can continue to live in their big castles and be surrounded by servants. We say, okay, why not? They can mobilize much of the British Empire, so let's work with them. Now, you then say P2 Masonic Lodge in Italy control the Vatican, the Mafia, and they have also agreed to try to help save the planet. So long as they offer to help the poor, the hungry, and the weak of this planet, we say, good, let us see action now and not words. Now, these two things, I understand why you're doing this. I would also say that probably 90 to 95% of people that are into conspiracy theory are going to want to literally rip you apart for having said that you work with these folks. Just because they are out there, I'd be happy to share my perspective on why you're saying this, but I'd like to hear from you first.
Yeah, look, these people are not a monolith, okay? It's not like a single evil entity.
And, correct.
What you had was some very bad people at the top, and we had this whole faction of group of these Nazis who believed in creating a super race of superhumans and enslaving the rest of humanity. And they were vicious murderers. And they ruled through terror and assassination. But a lot of people who they were ruling at the top of these secret groups hated their guts and really wished something could be done about it. So, you know, the Rothschilds are not like, I mean, there's so many of them now. You got to remember, we're talking about the descendants of King David and many different royal families and factions and whatever. And so, a lot of them, there was a big split in the Rothschild family between the people who owned the money printing machines and the people who actually had physical gold. And what happened was, in order to, the people with the money machines, in order to keep power, they deliberately shut this gold out of the financial system. So they wouldn't recognize it. So if you brought the gold in, and this happened with Marcos in the 1980s, he tried to sort of sell some of this gold in Japan, is that they will not accept the gold. It doesn't have the right stamp on it. But, Rockefeller and the CIA were illegally taking a lot of this gold and laundering it into the financial system in order to keep themselves in power. So there was a rogue group of murderous Nazis who kind of, you know, were carrying out this plot, and there was a group that was fighting them in secret for a long time. This is the people who backed Kennedy versus the people who assassinated Kennedy.
Right. Now, in my Disclosure Endgame book, I bring up the testimony of Dr. Peter David Beter, who documents in quite some detail in a series of audio transcripts beginning in 1975 and continuing to around 1982 or something, all of these inside politics going on, and he boiled it down to three major factions, which would primarily be your Rockefeller faction, your Rothschild faction, which he called the Bolshevik Zionist axis, saying that they have a Israeli presence as well as a Soviet presence. And then he was saying that the third axis was what he called the New Kremlin, which was actually a group that had been fighting these so-called Illuminati for some 200 years and were actually instrumental in the overthrow of the Bolsheviks from power in the Soviet Union in the late 1970s. Now, there's some very, very interesting depth of data in this stuff. All of the interviews with him are transcribed, and you can listen to the original audio for free and read the transcripts.
Well, let me tell you my understanding of how the factions work.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
You have to go back to the... You actually have to go back to the... To the time of when the Jews were taken to Babylonian captivity. What happened was the Babylonian king killed the male descendants of King David. And what happened was his bodyguard, his imperial guard, decided to become a secret society and restore the bloodline of their king by protecting the females in the family. And so they were married off to various princes in different places, and they kind of secretly guarded them. And before Jerusalem fell, they buried and hid the gold that they had. And so...
Now, who's the they? I'm sorry, who's the they?
These were the descendants of David.
Okay, okay.
And so when they went on the Crusades, they dug up the gold. And they became the Knights Templars.
Ah.
And they built a bunch of banks and charitable works around Europe. And then on Friday the 13th in 1300, whatever it was, the King of France and the Pope started arresting them all and killing them and torturing them. And they found out they worshipped the skull and bones called Baphomet and stuff. And then they fled in several directions. One group fled to the mountains of Switzerland, and that later became the BIS and, you know, the Swiss whole thing, banking thing.
Oh, okay.
Another group fled to Northern Europe, and they became the kind of Teutonic Knights, the Knights Templars, and the Nazis, the Thule Society. A different group fled to Scotland, where they formed the Roslyn Chapel, and they intermarried with the British royal family.
Hmm.
Another group went to Spain, and they were kicked out of Spain and sent to North America. And that was in 1492. And so these are the different factions that originally existed. In more modern times, I think what your friend was saying or your source was saying is more or less right, but there is a pro-Russian Christian faction that kicked them out of Russia.
Right.
Putin in power. Then there is a faction in the British who've always been fighting the Vatican and the Jesuits. And then the Jesuits and the Vatican tell me that it was the real problem was the Tool Society Muslim Alliance.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they said the Muslims are ruled, they're still ruled by a caliph. You see, they're all cousins and royal families and intermarry, so they actually have a leader of all these different kingdoms, and who controls the Sunni Muslims. And there was a, you know, battle between cousins 700 years ago or whatever, which resulted in the creation of Shia Muslims. And then in Asia, I think China, in Asia, I believe there's basically three factions. There's the Chinese Communist Party, there's the Xin Emperor. In other words, the last emperor who supposedly died as a gardener was not the last emperor. His grandson is now the emperor, and he controls an awful lot of gold and money. And then there's a faction in Taiwan that wants to restore the Ming Dynasty, and they have been, a lot of them have been bribed by the Federal Reserve Board. And this is the Ming that Christopher Story refers to.
Oh, okay. Understood.
And in Japan, I would say the secret government, 70% are pro-Western and 30% are pro-Chinese at this point.
But pro-Western could also mean that they sold out to the Rockefellers.
A lot of them did. The you know, just look at the Trilateral Commission membership list of Japanese and you'll see the ones who work for Rockefeller.
Right.
They're led by former Prime Minister Nakasone and that whole group. But they are no longer really in control here. But the battle is still going on. Basically, the emperor signed a treaty with the Rockefellers. So the things are changing here, too. But it's not over. So in other words, there's a lot of chaos and confusion, but what is for sure is that the Asians, that includes the Japanese and the Chinese and the Southeast Asian countries, have all agreed that they control most of the world's money, and they're no longer going to let the City of London and Wall Street decide how it's invested. And that is the core of this crisis. You see, the people of Wall Street and the city don't want to lose their power. And this is what the battle's all about.
Yeah, I think a fascinating point to interject here is if you go back to Peter David Beter's testimony and you look at his history of the Rockefellers, what you realize is that their world power and how it manifested simply came from the economic advantage that they held as the kingpins of the oil economy. And I think that when the Rothschilds set them up, they underestimated how dominant that economic force would be, that this group would end up splintering off and becoming such a megalithic force throughout most of the 20th century.
Well, yeah, there you have it. You have the Rothschilds pushing this global warming, which was really an effort to promote the nuclear industry and make it seem environmentally friendly again.
Right.
They battle against the oil and the war industry in the U.S. So you had two big factions there fighting. That was manifested in the election that Al Gore had stolen from him. Although it turns out he's also a scumbag, no? the thing they have in common is they want to have a central control over the energy. They want to charge everybody a monthly bill.
When you say they have in common, you mean the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers?
Rothschilds, yeah, the different factions all want centralized control of the economy. In other words, they all want to have a Babylonian God-King type system, you know, a secret ruler with godlike powers and everything under central control. And what's the difference is who is that person in central control? That's what the fighting has been about. And I think what most of humanity says is we're tired of having secret god kings ruling us, and we want this system to end. So that's the other real battle. And I personally believe in meritocracy as the best form of government. that is a pyramid that anybody can climb to the top if they're good enough, with complete transparency.
Well, I think the gist of what you're also saying here, just to reiterate this point, is that the other countries, of whom you've mentioned there are a variety of factions, have now eclipsed the economic power and growth of either the Rothschild or the Rockefeller factions.
That's right. And, you know, they were afraid that they're going to lose control. That's why they wanted to kill everybody. But you know, the Asians and the Asian Secret Society have been fighting them for hundreds of years and doing business with them at the same time, I might add. So, for example, some of the people I talked to, you know, sold the heroin to the CIA during the Vietnam War.
Right.
And when the CIA tried to double-cross them, they blew up a bunch of CIA airplanes, and then they went back to business.
Mm.
So they've been dealing with them since the times of the opium wars, or before, but they have not been controlled by them. And they've been trying very hard through bribery and promising, you know, to China that you will get to rule the entire planet, just work with us. They managed to, you know, corrupt a lot of people out here, but not enough to make a difference at the end of the day. And we've been weeding out the people they bribed, and we've identified them. So, you know, the process is ongoing. We're in a war, and it's not over.
Right, and I would say that the major tools that they seem to have on their side would be blackmail, bribery, death threats, intimidation, and all those things cost money, right?
And propaganda. Yeah, they cost money, yeah.
Yeah, and the point being that they're basically no longer able to finance the scope of intimidation, blackmail, and bribery operations required to keep a lid on this thing.
That's right, and, you know, now the mafia has broken away, and you know, the Chinese underground has broken away, and then the Japanese underground has broken away. So, you see, at the very top of the world, if you want to get that high in power, you have to have armies, spies, assassins. You know, it's not normal thinking anymore. This is how these people have operated, and they've had these secret organizations all over the world. And what's happened is that they're losing control over. They've lost control over the secret organizations in Asia, and there's a huge battle in the West between what I would say are the good guys who want to restore actual democracy and freedom of the press and everything, and the ones who are still trying to create or maintain the secret dictatorship that they've had, this, you know, Babylonian God-King system. And then within that, there's different factions. But I would have to say also that even if you cannot predict the details of the ongoing intrigues, because it's so complex and Machiavellian, you can say that at the end of the day, they're doomed. It's like if you light a cigarette, you cannot predict the individual swirls of cigarette smoke and how they're going to go. But you can predict that over a certain amount of time, the smoke will be evenly divided throughout the room. And the fact is they've lost control over the world's financial system, and that means that it is just a matter of time before they're control of Western society is going to end.
Now, when Christopher Story talks about dollar refinancing operations, you have mentioned something to the effect that the people who actually have legitimate money in the bank and aren't playing these collateralized debt obligation games and derivatives games and so forth, that their money will be preserved as we go through this transitional process. Is that correct?
Well, okay. My own independent information is that, it coincides a lot with Mr. Story, but not completely, was that they, first of all, under the President Clinton and Greenspan, they secretly passed a law allowing 100 times leverage. That is, you could bet 100 times what you really had.
This is the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act or something else?
Well, it's, you know, the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act is part of it, but the point is that, you know, usually there's a limit, like there was always a traditional limit of 10%.
Okay.
So you could, that is to say, for example, if you bought a $100,000 future contract, you'd have to have 10,000 real dollars.
Correct.
But now they made it so if you wanted to buy it, you only had to have 1,000 real dollars to buy 100,000. And that makes it much, much more high risk, high return. And what they did was they, for example, in California, there was an illegal Mexican worker earning $12,000 a year. And they gave him a loan to buy a house worth $750,000. And he didn't have to pay any, you know, money for the first 5 years. Now, of course they know that loan's going to go bad, but it doesn't matter because that was part of the plan. They then take that $750,000 house as collateral, put it in some kind of mortgage-backed fund, and then bet it 100 times more. So it would be suddenly $75 million, I believe. And when the price of real estate is going up, you get these astronomical profits, which they then park in the Cayman Islands and off the banking's official books, right? And then when the price of real estate started falling, they created these astronomical losses, which they also just hid. And their plan was to bankrupt the U.S. and then come back and buy everything on the cheap. But what happened was the rest of the banking world said, enough of this crime and theft. And they tried to sterilize this money, saying, no, you cannot cash that money. That was created through fraud. And this is where the battle lines are drawn. Now, the Bush and all these people, the feds, they want to cash that stuff in at 2.5% of what it's worth. But under Obama, they've reflated this bubble, and they've now got literally something like $4 quintillion. I had to look this up, you know. It's like a one with 30 zeros or something. You know, it's totally nonsense because the entire world GDP is $60 trillion. Okay, so it's like, I'll offer you $1 zillion, you know, please give me your sunglasses. You say, what? You know, I mean, this is the sort of nonsense it's degenerated into.
Right.
But you know, it's about power. And these guys still control a vast military apparatus, and they're threatening violence if we don't come to a deal. So,
these guys, meaning the Rockefeller faction.
Yeah, that whole group, the owners of the Federal Reserve Board. And then the owners of all the propaganda media company.
Well, it's my understanding from what Christopher Story is saying that Obama's executive order has now allowed Interpol to be holding people at gunpoint on both ends of these Federal Reserve transactions that are necessary to execute the lien that was put on them from China to the effect of some, what was it, $47 trillion?
Yeah, I'm also hearing that. And what the Rothschild people contacted me have made this following offer to China and the Asians, and I think it's a good one. They want to take gold they have, you know, stashed away in the Philippines and use it to back up all the dollars that were created through honest work. In other words, not this derivatives, you know, funny money, but the rest of the dollars, back them up to 1/28 of an ounce of gold for each dollar. And then they want to merge it with the Hong Kong dollar and rename it the Hong Kong dollar. So, and the reason is because 90% of the dollars ever created are owned by people who are not Americans, and they don't want that to become worthless paper. So they're trying to sterilize, you know, get rid of all this phony money that created by the feds as part of their plan to take over the U.S. and then make the rest legitimate again. Now, what the Chinese have done, and this is very clever on their part, is they took all their dollars and they bought commodities and everything physical they could get their hands on. So they were buying a bunch of gold futures. And they were demanding actual payment in physical gold. And what happened was the feds didn't have the physical gold, so they sent tungsten coated with gold, because it apparently weighs, has the same density almost.
You have to dope it with a little bit of lead, but yeah, basically it's the same. Yeah.
And I've confirmed this with someone who reports to the Politburo, so this is not something I heard, you know, on the internet or something. No?
I understand.
And then the Chinese said, well, no, we want real gold, and they don't have it. And they've been scrambling and scrambling. They've been begging us for gold, and we've been saying, no, buzz off. And so what they've done now is they've threatened to invade Venezuela, take over the oil fields there, and then cut off the oil out of the Gulf of, you know, out of the Persian Gulf.
Right, the Gulf of Aden.
Yeah, the Gulf of Aden. So that's what all this Yemen stuff is all about. So that's where the game stands now.
And this guy who tried to blow up the airplane on Christmas, Abdul al-Muttalib, or whatever his name was, that was indicated by Christopher Story as also being agent provocateur of some kind, correct?
Of course, of course. I mean, look, they ordered these naked body scanners before this ever happened, and the idea is to intimidate and humiliate and break down the American people into submission. Ultimately, they want to prevent travel if they can. So it's them saying, look, we can do whatever the hell we want to the American people, and they're no longer going to be able to fight us. We've got them totally subjugated. They'll do anything. This is what their message is. That's what this thing was all about, if you ask me.
Now, what do you think happened vis-a-vis the swine flu? Because there was massive paranoia on the internet about that, and a lot of people did get shots, but now we're not seeing some sudden massive die-off. At this point,
that whole thing was stopped. I mean, you know, Jane Burgermeister and others blew the lid on that, and that whole operation was failed. They were planning to kill a lot of people that way,
right?
But it was stopped. It was also a threat on their part, saying, "Hey, you know, if you don't deal with us, we'll kill everybody with disease." So you know, they were trying to use starvation and disease to kill people, but it's not working. So that plan, their genocidal plans have now been stopped. And
most people who read about conspiracy, and admittedly they may not know as much as they think they do, would attest that the P2 Masonic Lodge controlling the Vatican and the Rothschilds and so forth, they also want massive depopulation.
Well, there's been a generational change of leadership, and no, they no longer want this. And you can look at the Catholic Church. Okay, whatever you can say about them, they have always been against birth control, and everywhere they have, you know, strong Catholic rulership, like in South America, you have high rates of childbirth. So I can't see them as being in favor of depopulation. You see what I mean?
Right.
It's the Nazi group that wanted the depopulation. So there were, you know, but the Vatican people tell me that they were losing power. They were under attack, you know, by the Muslims and by the Thule Alliance.
This is slightly off track, but I'm going to veer back in. We know that the CEO of Rockefeller Enterprises was recently seemingly murdered. I don't know if they called it a murder or not, but I guess it was a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head or something, allegedly self-inflicted.
Well, what I was told is that they had to kill him or he would have killed some of our people, and it's like putting down a rabid dog. This is what they told me about that.
They meaning who?
This would be kind of MI6 type people, not Chinese or Asian type people, okay?
So given that assassination, and I believe you said before that David Rockefeller is more like a titular head of the cartel but is not actually really the big boss anymore.
The Rockefeller woman apparently rose up and you know, that whole thing with the shareholders meeting for Exxon, all these Rockefellers showing up. The whole clan said, look, enough, and David has stepped back, but we've got Jay Rockefeller active, and that's George Soros and Brzezinski and Obama, and you know, they're kind of anti-Bush, but they want to instead, you know, have Brzezinski, Soros, Obama, that whole group in charge. So that's who we're talking about now. Yeah, that's where they're coming from now. So that's Brzezinski, Jay Rockefeller, Soros, Obama.
Okay. Now, if you read Christopher Story's article, he basically says that Obama has now caved in favor of this larger international alliance so as to allow Interpol to get in, because otherwise, if he had continued to side with the people that were in his cabinet, he would have faced imminent political destruction. Now, I've also heard from Rothschild sources that same exact thing that you've heard, which is that there's this plan to have him removed before the end of this month, which may or may not happen, but I heard the same thing that you did before you published it.
Yeah, well, what I heard also is that there's this trial on January 6th about his citizenship, and that the judge is a Marine, and that he's not either going to have to kill the judge or, you know, Obama's going to be shown not to be legitimate, and the controllers of Obama don't want this exposed, so in order to cover things up and hide their tracks, they might try to kill him. This is what I've heard. Now, there are, I think, one group is saying they want to get rid of Biden and Obama and have Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton take over.
Mm.
So that would be like the woman in these factions saying, all right, look, our men folk have been bad. Give us a break. We'll let the woman on this side of the things handle it. And then, of course, there's a lot of people in the military and the other agencies and stuff who say, no, we don't want those nasty ladies there. They're just as bad. We want to install a temporary government, hold free and fair elections, and return the United States to constitutional rules. So that's where I think the fault lines are. And Christopher Story is obviously with the Queen of England. And the problem with the Queen of England is that I actually personally interfered on her behalf. Her husband, Philip, and the oldest son of Queen Beatrix showed up in Tokyo with a $2.1 trillion check.
A check?
And, yes, or a bond, whatever, you know.
Okay.
Instrument, I don't, you know.
And okay.
They asked me to call the bank and say, please cash it. So I did. I called the chairman of Mitsubishi Tokyo UFJ Bank and said the Black Dragon Society would like you to cash that check for them. And then she turned around and gave the money to George Bush and all those people.
Oh, my gosh.
Right in the Nazi faction. And then all sorts of people on the British side felt they had been betrayed by the Queen. And they started sending me all sorts of information about her. And it turns out...
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but how did you not get killed as a result of this?
Well, because I immediately explained that I had been fooled by these people and that I really had expected the money to go to ending poverty and stopping environmental destruction and not to, you know, financing, you know, another round of war.
I mean, let's just stop for a minute here and say this just to reiterate that you're saying that you're personally responsible for $2.1 trillion ending up in the hands of the Bushes.
Yeah, but I didn't know that. I was
wow.
And so we had to squish that money all, you know, freeze it.
Oh, so they didn't actually get it.
Well, they got it, and well, as soon as we saw where the money went, we froze the account.
Oh. Now you're saying that as a result of you realizing that you'd been double-crossed and how upset you were, that this
A lot of people in the U.S. and England then started giving me information about the Queen, you know, and she's got a lot of dirty laundry. They've been blackmailing her about, you know, Diana was pregnant with a Muslim child and she was going to convert to Islam, and that's why they killed her, for example.
Right.
Then, you know, a cousin of the Queen phoned and said that they actually had human sacrifices at Balmoral Castle twice a year.
Huh.
And then a illegitimate daughter of King Edward said that, you know, they made a deal with the Nazis, which is why the Battle of Britain was called off at the last minute.
Wow.
And if you're a military historian, everybody always said, you know, if the Germans had only kept pounding one more day at the British defenses, they would have won the Battle of Britain. But suddenly, they decided to start bombing instead. And why did they make this mistake? Well, it wasn't a mistake. They deliberately called off the attack because they made a secret deal with the British royal family. And this is the secret they don't want kept. And the other thing I was told by is that Hitler was actually Queen Elizabeth's uncle.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, we find out we have these royal families fooling the people, and they keep changing their last names. But if you look at Kaiser Wilhelm...
Wasn't Hitler like a Bronfman or something? I seem to remember reading that, or...
Schicklgruber. But if you look at a photograph of Hitler... And a photograph of Kaiser Wilhelm.
Okay.
A photograph of King George V. They look almost identical.
Wow.
These people marry each other's cousins, so they have very similar, you know, genes. So, in other words, we've been told a huge kettle of lies by these self-appointed kings who ruled us in secrecy for hundreds of years. And much of what we were taught of as history is going to have to be relearned because it's not true. For example, as a Canadian, I was told that the War of 1812 was the Americans invaded us, so we repelled them. And now I found out, actually, what happened was the the Americans didn't renew the Rothschilds banking license, and so they invaded the U.S.
Mm.
So, you know, I mean, all sorts of stuff that we've been taught is just plain wrong. And
well, you know, there was a massive revolt against the Masonic Order in America in the mid-1800s, which led to almost the complete collapse of Masonry. And then the Civil War was created so that people would want to join the Masons in order to get preferential treatment on the battlefield to save themselves from being killed. And that was the only way they were able to repopulate the ranks because of how badly this scandal involving the murder of Captain William Morgan had almost completely wiped out the Masonic Order. And that's something that you never hear in conventional history.
Of course. I mean, there's so much, you know, basically, you have to, once we, the Fed is out of the way and you go back to 1913, you'll find out that so much of World War I, World War II were all kind of set up according to a predetermined plot. And another thing I've heard, for example, recently is that, you know, the Titanic.
Oh, I heard this too. Go ahead.
Yeah, they deliberately put all these rich people and royalty who weren't going along with their plans on board, and then they were supposed to all have a chat as they crossed the Pacific, but suddenly, at the last minute, the J.P. Morgan and the bad guys didn't join the boat, didn't get on the boat, and they rammed it deliberately into an iceberg, and then they, at gunpoint, they prevented them from boarding the lifeboats. So this was like a way of killing a whole bunch of their enemies in one fell swoop.
Well, it was also the fact that, and this is very highly sensitive, and somebody told me this in confidence, but now that you've said it, I'll just go with it, but they said that the women and children first rule was already chosen in advance so that none of the men would live. And deliberately sabotage, which is why the captain was steaming towards the iceberg at top speed. And that Woodrow Wilson was aware that this had happened. And that's when he said, there exists this power in the world so subtle, so organized, so watchful, that we dare not speak above a whisper when we speak in condemnation of it.
Yeah, and remember there's a novel about a ship called the Titan that sank on its maiden voyage.
Oh, right.
About a year or two before that. Well, so they're in a way, they're announcing their plans to the insiders.
Right, because that's the ritual aspect of it, where they like to announce out in the open what they're going to do.
Yeah, the same with, they had a Fox special about a plane flying into the World Trade Center right before.
Right. You know.
So these people have really been making fools of us for a long time, and there's going to be an awful lot of anger when this comes out, but I think you have to remember, these people are born into that system, and it's enforced through gruesome murder, and so a lot of them had no choice, so we really do have to forgive them once this is out.
I agree with you, and I think that point is largely underestimated in the public, because the bottom line is, we can't go back to pogroms like they had when they were good Germans, and everybody says, oh, everybody who's a Jew is the problem, we need to get rid of them. Now, a lot of Germans didn't know that was being done, but certainly there were many within the command structure who did. And
the whole Holocaust thing was a Jew versus Jew thing, you know.
On some levels, yeah.
Yeah, on some levels. I mean, it's not... I think anti-Semitism has been used as a camouflage for a very long time to hide these Satanists, you know. And we cannot let them do that. We cannot let them try to sort of change this into some kind of, you know, Jewish prejudice thing, which is not. I mean, because most of the people who are taking them down now are Jews, you know, fighting against them. So it's not, we have to avoid that whole sort of trap and minefield they've created with this whole anti-Semitism propaganda business, you know.
The problem is that the public is not very forgiving, and they're going to turn into a lynch mob if they find out. And they are finding out the scope of what's been done. I think that's counterproductive, because these folks, even though they may have participated in these rituals and done some really horrendous things, they also are in a position where if they were to sort of change their tune and start working on behalf of humanity rather than against humanity, they could be very influential in a positive way in a very, very rapid amount of time.
Well, that's what they're saying, you know, and that's what they're offering us.
Right, because they already have the infrastructure, they already have the financial systems, they already have the corporations, there's all that infrastructure already in place, whereas if somebody were to just say, oh, let's exterminate everybody who's a member of said group.
Yeah.
Then
and the other thing is that they have been in charge of planning humanity's future for thousands of years.
Right.
And we can't just destroy that and then have nothing ready to replace it with. We do have to have some kind of system to so we can all decide what we want to do next. And we cannot just let there be chaos and disorder, which is what they're afraid of. So we do have to have an orderly transition. Now, I've always used the example of China in 1978. They did not dismantle the state-owned enterprises. They just built a new economy around them to the point where they became irrelevant. And I think that we let these Rothschilds live in their castles and do their stuff, and we'll build new stuff around them until they become, you know, like these relatively minor anachronisms. But they themselves will have an greater wealth than they had before. It's just that the rest of humanity is so much richer that their wealth won't seem so great anymore.
I think the average person who's listening to this and knows about this stuff, in order to keep them from yelling at the computer, let's just say that there are still going to be people in these groups who are going to participate in some black mass rituals and some things that are really nasty. Now, if betrayal is the core of what these groups' philosophy has been, how do we ensure that they not simply change their mind in another year and decide, oh, well, you know, now that we've gotten our enemies out of the way on the American side of things, the Rockefeller faction, now we're even more powerful, now we can kick the world's ass.
Well, that's where the Black Dragon comes in, yeah, because we're going to have a secret organization that will go back to sleep, but we'll monitor these people and make sure it doesn't happen again. So there's no way they're going to be able to get away with it again.
Too many people know about it, and there's too much power that's outside of their own control.
Yeah, and the Asians will have their own secret network, and they will keep these people out of there. And that'll be one, and hopefully, there's a new organization in the West, which I've called the Black Dragon Society. But I need to make this clear. There is a different Black Dragon Society that was responsible for trying to create the Greater East Asia Co-Prosperity Sphere during World War II.
Correct.
And there are still their descendants of these people who run an organization that has the same name. But we know them. We talk with them. We have similar goals in many ways, but they're a separate organization. I chose the name Black Dragon Society because they set up martial arts centers all over the world, and these are run according to meritocracy. And it's not, they've always had a philosophy against nepotism. So we're saying, no, the original Black Dragon philosophy was to create a worldwide network for self-defense and never attack. And we have very, very powerful people in the Asian underworld who support this and who are part of it. So the head of it is a Japanese person.
Hmm.
And I'm kind of like a liaison with the Western societies.
So this is not just a bunch of people that are going to karate class on Wednesday night. You're saying that these martial arts organizations are fronts for something that's more organized than that.
Oh yeah, no, I mean at the very top you have some very serious people. I mean, you got to remember they're all over the Chinese and Japanese military and the Yakuza and all this kind of stuff. And there's so many, you know, like, for example, almost 200,000 U.S. Special Forces trained in ninjutsu here in Japan. And all those people have had serious martial arts training. And a lot of them believe in the philosophy that you should only fight to defend, and you should never attack women and children, and you should protect the weak. And a lot of the people in the Western forces completely agree with that philosophy. And the thing is, though, of course, in the West, they don't want to be ruled by China. And that's, of course, China's not going to rule the West. The point is that China and Asia does not want the West to rule them anymore. And they have had a secret colonial form of government in Japan. And they've been trying always to take over China, and the Chinese keep booting them out. The last time was in 1967. They kicked out all the Russians and the communists and all those people.
Hmm.
Comintern. So
Now you're saying that this Japanese secret society, through the martial arts societies, that there's 100 million members of it?
Well, I mean, if you took all the people around the world who study karate, judo, jujutsu, and stuff, and the people who have studied them, and you think, you know, you get about that many people, and in an emergency, we believe these people can be mobilized. In fact, we know they can.
Right, so it's the instant ramen army kind of argument.
Yeah, I mean, there is a hierarchy, there is a command structure in place, and if there are people out there trying to kill 4 billion people, then of course everyone will say, hey, no, you're not going to kill my family.
And right.
Of course they'll fight.
Right.
But I don't think we need to get to that level. Another thing I want to tell you how I think it's going to end is that I was in South America, and I saw lots of coup d'etats happen.
Mm.
Basically, it's quite simple. You have a president, a general, and a finance minister who are in charge. And maybe one day the finance minister and the general meet in a sauna and say, hey, you know, the president's going to replace us with his relatives, and we have to move first. And the general says, well, I know a colonel who can near the capital who will work for me, and I can invade the presidential palace and capture the TV station. And the finance minister says, well, I'll go to Wall Street and get Henry Kissinger's permission. And he goes, and Henry Kissinger says, okay, give me a few more banana plantations and go ahead. And then there's some shooting at the presidential palace early in the morning. The president is shot. There's some shooting around the TV station. And suddenly, a new face appears on the TV. And that's when 99% of the people find out.
I see.
So, in a similar way, this high-level battle that people are very few people are reporting, and when it's over, there are going to be sudden big announcements, you know, all over the TV, all over everything. And that's when the brainwashed people are going to finally figure it out. Not until then, I'm afraid.
Well, if you think about what happened with the economic collapse of 2008, it was quite spontaneous, you know.
Oh, no, I was told in advance that would happen.
Right, as was I. But for the average person, all of a sudden you have Lehman Brothers going down and all these other companies that AIG...
Yeah, what happened was they cut them off, the feds off, all of a sudden, right?
They who?
This would be the Rothschild faction and the new banking system people.
Okay.
Cut off all that toxic waste from the financial system. And then there's been a ping pong battle over control of these banking computers ever since. And the Fed people sent people out to China saying, please, you know, give us some money. We'll change. You know, once we have Obama and everything will be different. And so the Chinese lent them $1 trillion and tried to give the benefit of the doubt to Obama.
Mm.
And they promised they would turn the U.S. into a communist country and whatever, and that China would be in charge of the world, and then we'll give you our military secrets, anything, but please, you know, give us more money. And that's how they kept this thing going for the past year. But that ended in December with these Interpol planes and stuff. And so I'm now hearing that there's some sort of, you know, accounting dates in this month that might be crucial. But, you know, they're still trying very hard to suck up to and bribe China. And it's still not 100% over until it's over. But things are looking very good. It looks like the feds are really on their last legs. But they're not going to go quietly, and it's not over till it's over. Okay, well, look, I mean, I think I've said what I have to say at this present point anyway.
Well, but... Okay.
As for the space and alien stuff, I'll believe that when the average person can go to the local spaceport and buy a ticket to another planet. You know, it's got to be really that obvious.
Well,
I want these people to show up. I want to see it happen. But I believe that we're on our own, and it's up to us humans to solve our problems and not wait for some space fleet. Although I wish it happens, and if it does, I'd be very happy.
I don't disagree with you in the sense that I feel like we do need to solve our own problems. What I'm trying to say is that we have had someone who worked in Space Command come forward and give some really explosive testimony.
Yeah, I understand, but I want to see actual spaceships, you know, landing in different cities around the planet, or at least, you know, being up there and anybody can look at them with a telescope. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see them take action, and I don't want to hear talk about UFOs coming to rescue us. And I also know that they were planning a fake alien invasion. I have this from Von Braun's secretary.
Carol Rosen, right.
Yeah, that they were planning a fake alien invasion as a cover for genocide. So, you know, my first suggestion is that maybe they're just playing for time so they can still pull off this scenario. And we're not going to give them that time.
But I just want to point out here that you are now claiming that your membership includes the Pentagon White Hats and Space Command. These are the people with all those levels of security above the president.
Yeah, all right. They sent a guy out here who claims to be from that faction.
Okay.
Who was with the remote viewing outfit of the CIA.
Okay.
Gave me a whole bunch of material about forbidden technology and a lot of valuable information. And he seems like a nice guy, and he seems sincere, and he does seem to represent this the good guys in the Nazi faction. And we had a good talk the other day, and he's gone back to the USA, and he'll be back in Japan in later in January, and we're going to take him to meet the head of the Black Dragon Society, and hopefully we're going to come up with some sort of agreement so that the guys threatening to cut off the Gulf and invade Venezuela will agree to a, you know, swords to plowshares transition. So that's the kind of negotiation that's going on.
Well, now, in your private newsletter, you mentioned the swords to plowshares transformation, and then you also say this group has the potential to develop the over 6,000 patents that have hitherto been suppressed for national security reasons. One technology they possess is anti-gravity. This would make automobiles obsolete and allow roadways to be transformed into gardens. They claim to control technology that allows the creation of portals into other dimensions. They claim, we have not seen proof but have heard this from many credible eyewitnesses, that many so-called underground bases around the world are actually such portals. Hopefully we will soon be able to see this if it is true. If so, the implications are more than mind-boggling.
Well, again, I mean, they gave me the material about the Philadelphia experiment and a bunch of scientific essays on anti-gravity describing in detail how it works, which is why I felt that, okay, you know, I can write this saying, all right, they provided a lot of credible evidence, but they haven't provided proof. Yet, okay.
Well,
I haven't flown an anti-gravity scooter yet. I haven't walked through a portal. I haven't seen one. So, it sounds good, and they did provide convincing evidence, but not proof.
I understand. I'm just telling you that I now have three people I've directly spoken to at length myself, who've actually been through these portals, and what was so shocking to me was that this comes out on your blog, the subscriber-only blog, literally within days of when the third and in some ways the most amazing witness came forward saying exactly the same thing. And you didn't hear from me on this, and I haven't even published it yet, but yet we're all talking about the same stuff here.
Yeah, but you got to remember that they were, you know, if you take a cynical approach, you have all these former military types talking about UFOs. Well, maybe, you know, they're just preparing public opinion for the fake, you know, invasion, right? So I always keep an open mind, but I also remain cynical at the same time.
I think that's one of your strengths. You're not easily manipulated, and you're not just going to be spoon-fed disinformation. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I find it very interesting that somebody from this group would have approached you guys, and I'm just curious as to what exactly are they saying now? Are they saying that once this power structure is shifted and the venom has been drawn out of the system, that they would like to still be relevant, they would like to still be involved, and at that time they share this portal technology?
Well, what they said was they don't want to end up like when the Soviet Union collapsed and generals were suddenly finding themselves working as taxi drivers in London.
Right.
And they're saying, look, if you do that, we'll fight. And we don't want to be ruled by the Chinese either. And, of course, we're saying, yes, you know, no, the Chinese don't want to rule you. And, you know, we'll keep paying your salaries. So just, you know, you don't have to fight. And instead, we'll write off U.S. debt and help the United States rebuild their economy again. So, you know, it's a win-win solution we're offering, and I think they understand that. And we're also saying there's not going to be any Nuremberg trials, although there may be a South African-style Truth and Reconciliation Committee. But anyway, that's about it. When it happens, it'll happen, you know. Let us see. But I'm getting a lot of good news, and I'm gonna hang up now, and I'm gonna start making some calls to some of my sources to get the latest information. Okay?
Great. Well, I really want to thank you, and I'm sure that everyone listening to this thanks you. Just one quick question is, how vomitous do you think the economic transition will be when it actually happens? Should we be prepared for some very hard times, or do you think it'll be fairly smooth? Or the common person listening to this, how's it going to affect them?
Hopefully, it'll be fairly smooth, and there won't be a lot of disruption. But I do believe everybody should have a certain amount of food on hand, because bad guys are going to try to create starvation still.
Right.
And it's not over till it's over. But, forget about gold. At the end of the day, you can't eat gold, okay? The most important thing is to have enough food and a plan, you know, somewhere in the countryside you can go to if things really do fall apart. But I don't think it's going to come to that.
What would be the time window and or the signal that we would need to really take that seriously?
Well, if they ever try to, you know, they're trying to declare martial law, but if they ever actually start physically rounding people up and taking them to these Halliburton camps, that's the time for everybody to grab their guns and, you know, fight for their lives.
Well, if Interpol is in the U.S. and stopping these guys, don't you think that would also stop the Halliburton troops and stuff?
Well, that's what we believe, and we don't think the Pentagon is going to just obey any orders to do that. So I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm saying that's the worst-case scenario they were planning, and we're pretty sure it's not going to happen.
Right. I know it's a war and it's nonlinear, but what would you say is the most probable window of time that we have to be prepared for these hardships to occur?
This year.
Okay. So it would be a good idea for the people listening to us talking to probably prepare now and have some stored food on hand so that in the event that there's a disruption temporarily of goods and services, that they can ride it out fairly smoothly.
And you can get, you know, go to, just get yourself a few big sacks of rice and beans. It's very cheap, and you can store, like, a year's worth of food for a few hundred dollars, okay? You don't have to go into expensive freeze-dried food and stuff, you know? That's all it takes, rice and beans.
Do you think there could be a disruption of oil supplies as well, people not being able to drive for a while?
Well, the U.S. has enough emergency stocks that it's not going to be an issue.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. Right. Well, I thank you very much, and I hope to speak to you again soon. And keep letting us know what's going on. I hope everybody will sign up for your blog, because it's really wonderful.
Thank you.
Great. You have a great day.